Do it again.
Of all the gin joints in all the towns in all the world.
You're listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.
Hey girl, a martini, shaken, not stirred.
Don't try and church it up, son.
You can't handle the truth.
I am big. The pictures have got small.
Your first one's on us.
Hey, everybody, you're watching Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling. I'm Richie Byrne, and with me, as always, my host,
Margaritana.
Your host, I fucked it up.
That was cool. It was the old switcheroo.
I was so close.
It was great.
If you're a regular watcher, you know that Mark always intros the show. But we got some crap going on today. First of all, I don't know what's going on with my hair, but we got some things going on today. Mark is actually working as our producer. We had a little double booking, and Joey's working on another show, Gary Allen's show. And so Mark is going to do the production and post. So I'm going to kind of take the lead here. And if there's any real bad glitches, it's Mark's fault.
Blame me. I'm happy and easy to blame.
How are you, brother?
I'm good, man. I just the kids
nervous?
Just went.
You look nervous.
I am. The kids just had they went for their walk because Angie's an angel and takes them out of the house while we're doing this.
Right.
And Gizmo just got his hair cut. So I hear Axel as he's leaving go, I just hate leaving. I can't resist Gizmo. He's too cute.
Aww.
And I was like, that's so sweet. What an adorable child. And then Duke came in to say goodbye wearing sunglasses and said, I said, hey, Duke, you taking off? He goes, no, I'm Mr. Awesome. Because he had sunglasses. I go, oh, okay, I didn't recognize you, Mr. Awesome. And he goes, and Mr. Awesome doesn't wear underwear. And I got mooned. So,
Well, like father, like son. So
we have the same sense of humor.
There you go.
Nice.
There you go. Yes, absolutely. So we had a great show today, bro.
We have a really great show. I'm so excited.
It's our Showbiz Thursday.
Thursday. We got a good friend of mine I've known for a while. And we'll get into the story when we met, but this guy is a writer. He's a director. He's a producer. He's been nominated for 3 Emmys, including this year.
Wow.
For outstanding.
And he's got a heart out.
Yeah. For outstanding digital innovation. This guy is a sweetheart of a guy. I'm going to bring him out. Ladies and gentlemen, come on, make some noise. Mike Furno is in the house.
Mike Furno!
I had to say make some noise because I couldn't find the right button. So I was doing the MC stall when you forget someone's name.
Yeah.
Come on, I can't hear you. I can't hear you at home.
Your kids, by the way, sound tremendous. My kids during quarantine basically just try to photobomb Zoom meetings and hit me with objects while I'm, I had to lock the door and he'll still somehow manage to get in. So.
How old?
I got a 5-year-old and one that's going to be a year in a couple weeks.
And the year-old's the one that's breaking in.
Yes.
But the 5-year-old has realized that he's not trapped in here with us, that we're trapped in here with him. So, you know what I mean? He's just
the power shift.
He's just said, fuck it, and I'm going, you know?
That's awesome. So, look, the guy knows the show.
Yeah, love you, man. You were right on that. What are you drinking, brother?
I got a Writer's Tears whiskey. Because, as Mark will tell you, we're in the middle of writing a screenplay, and that process is enough to make a grown man cry. So
that's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
That's what drinking filtered with some peat moss. And
I went over to Mike's for a meeting, and this guy had a selection of whiskeys that would make a bar blush. Ballroom would go, man, I wish I had that guy's whiskey collection.
It's nice. I work with a lot of agents because my job at Major League Baseball, I got to deal with a lot of players, and I'll hire players for sponsored content. So agents always at the end of the year always send me for Christmas a nice little bottle of something that is way outside my price range. So
that sounds like the best payday ever.
I'd rather cash, but good whiskey's okay too. So
yeah.
See, that's why you're further ahead in your career than me.
Right. I get paid in whiskey all the time.
Yeah. Well, a $200 bottle of whiskey, or why don't you just give me $100 and I'll buy a $100 bottle of whiskey because I really won't know the difference. So it's okay.
Okay, then we do have that in common. Yeah. I am a glutton more than a connoisseur. Sure.
Yeah.
Well, that's nice. A little whiskey. What do you got going on, Mark?
I am doing Miller High Life, the champagne of beers. It was on sale at the beer distributor.
Nothing about
special. A couple 36 packs.
I want to go back and get something better now because Michael really showed up.
No, listen, I would love to drink beer, but if I keep putting on calories during this time, I'm going to graduate a circle. You know what I mean? Like, I got to come back. I got to get out of here somehow. You know, I'm not just stress eating. Like, I feel like I'm stress slash bored eating. Like, I don't know. I just can't stop eating.
Consuming.
Consuming, yeah.
I was so stressed by this, I gained 15 pounds before the pandemic. So, going to keep using that joke, Mark.
It reminds me of the, like, Norm MacDonald used to have that bit where he'd say, I got one of those acting roles where I had to put on the weight. The problem is I haven't got casted yet. So the second thing we do in our show is we like to share a joke. So, Mike, do you have a favorite joke you like to tell?
I do have a favorite joke, but since I'm here sort of as a representative of Major League Baseball, I don't think I'm going to tell it. But
tell it after the show. I'll tell it after the show.
But, you know, with a five-year-old who's actually getting into Star Wars now, I've been doing a lot of dad jokes and a lot of Star Wars jokes, so they got the... Did you hear the one about the claustrophobic astronaut?
No.
He just needed a little space.
Yeah. That's what happened. Good one after the show.
Yeah, I will. But now, listen, so Mark knows my wife. I married a Canadian comedian, you know, like Second City, the whole deal. So she's not, you know, since we had kids, she stopped doing the circuits. That's where I know Mark. So, we lived dirty jokes for forever. Yeah. Now, I think to sort of censor yourself around, not only censor yourself, but come up with humor that's going to make these kids laugh is, I think, almost more challenging than a good dirty street joke, you know?
Right. Did you meet her in a club? How'd you meet her?
I met her at a bar. We were up there. We're up in Canada, and I was hired by a production company to do a script cleanup job. And it was great. The script had 60 pages at the end of a 3-day weekend, and you know, like a bender, like a real like drinking, you know, party. Hardcore drinking party bender. We wrote another 60 pages, so we decided to just have it read. And you know, local bar had a lot of actresses that were working there, so she happened to be one of them. We didn't get along so well at the reading because I didn't think she did a good job. And then 2 weeks later, when I got hired by the production to come back, my first place I went to was that bar, and she was working, and she remembered me and was super nice to me. And then, you know, we got together like two nights later, and I've been together ever since. So,
wow.
That's awesome. Dude, that's why you and I are so close. I met Angie at a bar, and we didn't get along the first night.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden... We started dating and got married and have kids now.
Yeah. I think there's probably something that you don't like them right away because part of you knows that this is probably somebody special and you're just denying it, you know?
This is a good idea. Don't do it.
maybe you thought she was such a bad actress you had to marry her to save her from herself. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
This girl is so bad.
Yeah. Like, clearly she has no future in acting. So I'm just going to make her a housewife and everybody will be
hopefully
happy.
Hopefully she's not watching.
Oh, okay. She will. I'll hear about it later.
The great thing about hearing Mike or me saying that we married a fixer-upper is the greatest joke that we can tell.
Yeah, for real.
So you've been in show business for a very long time and you've worn a ton of hats.
Career. Yeah.
You worked with... friend of our show, Danny Aiello, you know, somebody that we all love. We've talked about a dozen times probably on the show since we started. You were a writer, director, and a producer in his production company. That's a pretty cool thing.
Yeah, we actually started it together.
You started with him? That is awesome.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, if I remember correctly, you have a fun story.
So... So first of all, you know, Danny, RIP, one of the finest you know, Italian American actors that was going, I think, really underrated when you look at his the work that he did. But a hell of a guy, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, he actually, when Laura came here to America, he let her host his comedy room. Like, he let her book his comedy room. So the one in the old Tutta Pasta one up in Hoboken. Yeah.
You know? Hoboken. Hey, real quick, I figured it out. Watch this. Bam!
That's a movie premiere for Shorty, the very first movie that we made together.
We have to talk about that as well.
Yeah. So just real quick, because this might be like my story, you know? So I was working as a traffic reporter for ABC Eyewitness News. So I was 25 years old. I was lead singer of a band and I was on TV in New York City. Like, life was about as good as it could be. So it really kind of went to my head, and I didn't understand the business because it happened to me really quickly. Like, I dropped out of college, went to Connecticut School of Broadcasting, got a job. 2 years later, I'm on TV in New York City. I kind of just thought, this is my world, you know?
People say showbiz is tough.
Yeah, right.
Jesus.
I quit thinking that I'm on TV, I'm just going to walk into Hollywood and sign like a 3-picture deal because they've seen my face on, you know, as a traffic reporter on Eyewitness News. So long story short, 6 months later, I'm waiting tables at the Houston's at the Riverside Square Mall in New Jersey during lunch shift because I had to move back in my parents' apartment because I lost everything. That morning, I had to get a root canal, which with no insurance, I could not afford. I was feeling really shitty and at the low point of my life, and it was 2 days before Christmas. And when you wait tables, if you want to go out and have a cigarette, you got to bring the garbage. I bring the garbage. Restaurant garbage is just so nasty.
Horrible. Yeah.
I went to dump it, and it all just dumped on me. You know what I mean? So, like, here I am. I just, you know, $1,000 for a root canal, money that I don't have. 6 months ago, I was on top of the world, and now I'm waiting lunch tables, and I'm covered in dirty restaurant garbage. I really, like, it was probably the only time in my life I legitimately felt like I could kill myself right now. You know what I mean? This is how life would be. Well, you know, fuck you, you know? So I went back in, and who's sitting sat at my table but Danny Aiello? And I'm a big, big fan because I love Do the Right Thing. Harlem Nights is one of the great comedies of all time. And I was like, oh, all right, I got it. I'm going to do this. So I gave him great service. And at the end of the dinner, I sort of pitched him this idea. This is 1999. I pitched him the idea of this merging of the internet, which had just sort of like started to become commercial, and content. And he leans back and he's like annoyed. He's giving me that glare, and I was done. And I'm like, and he goes, kid, you know how, he's there with his wife, Sandy, by the way, another beautiful person. He goes, kid, you know how many fucking people want my help? Hundreds, thousands. What makes you so different? And then, like, without hesitation, like as if God was speaking through me, I looked him dead in the eye and I said, Danny, with all due respect, those people want you for what you could do for them. I'm telling you what I'm going to do for you.
Nice.
And he just smiled and he's like, you know what, kid? You got balls the size of planets. Give me your number and maybe I'll call you. And then,
oh my God.
Two weeks later, AOL merges with Time Warner. And it's all over the news. And then I get a phone call at my parents' house from Danny Aiello, saying, hey, kid, is this what you were talking about? I was like, yeah. He goes, why don't you meet me for lunch tomorrow at the Friars Club? And then I'm at the fucking Friars Club. You know what I mean? Like, and then from there, like, everything just sort of rolled. You know what I mean? He was a role model and a mentor and, you know, fucking God rest.
You know, his first movie was Bang the Drum Slowly, which is a baseball movie.
Yeah. Yeah, with De Niro.
With De Niro, yeah.
Yeah, I got to show you something because it's right here. I'll be like seriously, like 1 second. You can see
no problem, man.
I don't keep much from my career. I'm not like a sentimental guy. I don't really have like a lot of things. But this right here, you could see it. This is the receipt from his sitting at my table.
Shit. It is.
Oh, my God.
It's the receipt from Danny at my table that night.
Let's see the tip.
$20 on $20 on a $41 meal.
Oh, there you go.
Danny Aiello, another glass.
All right.
Danny, right?
Dude, that's so gangster. That is a gangster story, dude.
Yeah, and then so you know, we started a company together. It wasn't easy, you know. It's still the business, you know. No matter who the hell you got, but
yeah,
we worked together and we did some, you know, we did some really cool things. And I legitimately like owe him everything. When he died, like it was like one of the three times in my life like I was legitimately sad about somebody not being my life anymore, you know.
Yeah. I remember when that was announced, the first thing I thought of was you and your wife. It was the first thing that popped in my head, just like, oh my God, that were so close.
Yeah.
Every time I was around you guys were just so close with him, and you guys spoke in your own language. It was really cool to see.
Oh man, he treated me like, not only did he treat me like a son, but like he was so patient with me. You know what I mean? Like when we went to Vegas one time and he got me a meeting with Les Moonves. You know, and it's like, I have no fucking business here. You know what I mean? Like, why am I sitting with Les Moonves? And he's like, I want you to meet the kid. This is the kid. And I'm just like, I get nothing. Like, what am I here? You know what I mean? Like, why am I here? I don't belong here. And, you know, he treated me like I belong. So,
so you were talking about your short, the shorties.
Mm-hmm.
Give us a background on that. It's such an interesting idea that you did a doc, and well, I'll let you explain it.
We were out to make a horror movie, actually. We just raised $100,000 to make a horror movie, and it wasn't really enough, but we were going to try to make it anyway. And then a friend of mine who I used to wait tables with went to school at this place, Hamden, Sydney, and came back and told us about this guy. Just telling stories. She's like, oh man, I was back for the weekend and this guy Shorty and it was hilarious. And kind of a light bulb went off in my head, which was like, oh, this guy sounds kind of awesome. What if we make a movie about him? We should go down and meet him. And then like 2 weeks later, we went down to meet him. The family almost didn't hung up on me because I thought I was a telemarketer, but they agreed to meet him. And then somehow college, this old Southern institution let four Yankees, because you had to see who my partner was, this guy Craig Sikorski, who's actually now making a horror movie, my buddy Daniel Doyle, who's, you know, he's bald with the mutton chops and tattooed, and then Tony Caggiano, who, you know, at his peak weight is 400 pounds, his fighting weight, you know, like,
say, looks Italian. Like a Tony Caggiano.
Yeah, Tony Caggiano. They let these four Yankees come down and spend 4 months on their campus, like following around these people and everything like that. And we ended up getting lucky with what happened, you know, much like people who film documentaries do. It's like the Tiger King, you know, you can't plan that. It happens and you're like, holy shit, we got a great movie. And that happened to us, you know, like they won the big game in the last second and just everything sort of fell into place. And then we cut a good movie and sort of went out of the gate. And it was almost like my TV career where it was like, first movie, won film festivals, well reviewed. It's like, this movie making thing is easy. I can totally.
Hey, all I gotta do was the movie that you guys were making. Was it unconventional?
No. It was called Dead Girls Don't Say No. Was the working title of the
movie? Wow. Definitely before the Me Too movement, huh?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that and the fact that that was the movie that we took the money from and put it into a movie that ended up raising about $250,000 for the Special Olympics, you know? So weird. Actually, just real quick, because I know you guys are baseball fans. I got a story about Adam Dunn. You guys remember Adam Dunn, right?
Yeah.
So what you may or may not know is Adam Dunn won an Oscar as a producer of Dallas Buyers Club, okay?
I didn't know that.
So – but what had happened was, is that he got on a bender with Charlie Sheen, right? Because he was a Red, Charlie Sheen's a Red fan. He was on a bender with Charlie Sheen, and Charlie Sheen was trying to get him to invest in Major League 4, right? It was going to be like a big whole thing. So like Adam's like, yeah, fuck it. I'll invest in Major League 4. So he gave the money to the production company. They lost out on that script. It just stopped, but the production company had money, so they pivoted and hired somebody else, went to the Dallas Buyers Club, which then ended up winning an Oscar, which ended up getting Adam Dunn, the big donkey, an Oscar for a movie about AIDS in the 80s.
Really?
It was originally supposed to be an investment in Major League 4.
Man, talk about failing up.
Yeah.
Wow. And it's a shame because Sheen would have won the Oscar for Major League 4.
Yeah. That's true. He was due. You know what I mean?
Like, that kid had a future.
Oh, God.
So you started, how did you get into all of a sudden, you know, you're doing horror movies, documentaries. How all of a sudden do you slide into working like on Derek Jeter, a Yankee first?
My life before I met my wife was great. Like there was, and I'm still not knowing. Go ahead.
First of all, really, like you're speaking for every man, but go ahead.
Yeah. I'm not saying that it's not great now because it is, when I was rolling, like it was like I had worked my way back, like I'd written and directed like, you know, two movies. I had done like a bunch of stuff, and you know, and I could, but what I mean great in the sense of that, I had no attachments, and I could fit my whole life in my car, you know. Which to a guy like me is that's what I wanted. You know what I mean? Like I wanted to be 30 years old, dating 22-year-old actresses, you know what I mean? And like, and being able to be like, oh, that's how I ended up in Canada, because they called me up and they're like, hey, you want to come up here for 4 months? And
sure.
I was like, yes, I do. You know what I mean? Like that'd be awesome. You want to go to Tokyo and film a documentary? Yes, I do. But when I met Laura and I knew that she was the one, I was like, well, fuck, man, I should probably get health insurance. You know what I mean? Like it started this sort of decision-making process of if we're going to do this together, I can't live like this. And so I got up early in the morning for a bunch of mornings and started applying for jobs that were on Mandy, you know, and I would get up at like 5:30 to get the jobs as they would sort of just come in.
Wow.
And one of them was like for Major League Baseball Advanced Media. The guy who eventually hired me, my guy Brian Angioletti, he eventually said to me, he's like, you know, he's like, the only reason that you got the interview is because I only took the first three people that applied. He's like we got 1,000 applications. You know what I mean? He's like, I only looked at the first three things. So I love baseball, like love baseball. And so yeah, I got the job. And
now, as a kid, were you one of those kids who knew every stat, or you just like in love with just how to play?
The Yankees are my team. Yeah, Yankees are my team. But yeah, but I could from the 80s. And Reggie Jackson hit his 3 home runs against the Dodgers on my birthday. You know what I mean?
He knew it, Michael.
He did. He said, Ferno, this one's for you, and then just went off.
That's what everyone said. It was for a kid in a hospital bed, but it was actually for you because you were just a big fan.
Yeah. I weight in Reggie balls as a fat kid. So it was interesting because when, you know, in 2000, when we talked about the idea of the internet and content merging, our ideas were too early. The technology wasn't there yet. You know what I mean? Like there wasn't the phone, like, you know what I mean? Like there wasn't the bandwidth to sort of to do this, what we're doing now. Like, you know what I mean? Like this is what we imagined. It just, the technology wasn't there. But when I got to work for baseball in 2006 with MLB Advanced Media, they had this technology, but they didn't have somebody like me to tell them how that technology could convert into content other than for just streaming live baseball. And so it started this great marriage of where I was able to create and innovate, because baseball, man, I mean, it's baseball. You know what I mean? Like it's one thing to create something. It's another thing to create exactly the same thing, but for Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
It'd be different. Like if I did what I did for anybody else, like if we just did what we did, like, you know, this group together, no Emmy nomination. Now, I'm not saying why we got nominated for an Emmy isn't worthwhile, you know what I mean? But I think that the fact that I work for Major League Baseball is something that people look at and say, yeah, you know what I mean? Like, you get, like, you know,
excited about it.
Yeah, there were so many little tiny movements in the whole media sphere from like 2008 to 2012 that, like, not to brag, but like that I had a lot to do with, because the technology was like, we were working with Apple, Google, you know what I mean? Like the big time guys to like come up with stuff, you know? And sort of like to be a part of that was like, it was, Shorty's the best thing I ever. That's the best time of my life professionally, because it was this perfect marriage of having resource and inspiration, mm-hmm. as well as freedom to do something. And so, like, you know, now it's different. Now I'm kind of the old man, you know what I mean? So I'm like almost being put out to pasture in a way, you know, where I'm advising the new young kids who are coming up thinking that they know everything about content. But man, for like a stretch of like 10 years there, man, you know what I mean? Like, we moved and shaked, and it was tremendous.
But you've hung with everybody. Like, yeah. You really have hung with everybody. Look at, tell me.
Well, now he has, Mark.
Yeah, now he can officially say that he hung. Like, look at when he used to slum it, when he was slumming it. Look at these guys he used to hang out with. Nerds.
That's John Glazer, Andrew McCutcheon, Joe Trulio, John Hamm, Paul Rudd, Carlos Correa, and one guy who really doesn't belong in that group of people. That was at the 2015 Mets Royals World Series.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. Huh. I was with Carlos Correa for four games as his like liaison and stuff like that. And
you were at the Harvey game? Were you at the Harvey game? You must have been. Matt Harvey.
Which one was that?
I got in the ninth and got lit up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you remember which game number that was?
Was that four?
It might have been.
I think they went down 3-1 when they lost that or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah. I think it was game four because it was either game three or game four.
Because I think it was the first game in New York. And I remember he was, you know, and he wouldn't come out of the game. And
yeah,
it's history.
Yeah, that was game three then, because that was the first game in New York. Okay. That picture, yeah.
Right.
And so Nick Kroll, who's a big Mets fan, was down there, and I guess Rudd called him and said, "Why don't you come up to the suite?" So Nick Kroll comes up there, and I'm standing next to Nick Kroll, and the Mets implode. And he turns to me, and every sports fan will know this. He turns to me real serious. He goes,
"This is you.
Did I do that?" Because, you know, because he moved his seat. And came
absolutely.
Out. Like, he's like, did I do that? Like, did I?
Yep.
Did I cause
yes,
the
Mets? You did.
That was my answer to him too. I was like, yeah, you should probably go back.
I'm gonna have to
believer
leave.
In that.
Now you got to tell Richie about the time that you turned down hanging out with Jeter.
Oh God. I don't have many regrets, okay? I have two regrets. I have two regrets that involve baseball. One is with Derek Jeter. One is with Paul Rudd. All right. So I Dave Winfield is my guy. I've gotten a chance to work with him, but like I would walk over hot coals for Dave Winfield. Like, he's my number one, but Derek Jeter was close to my number two. You know what I mean? Like, because obviously. Right. So I had the chance to work with Derek Jeter, and I was like shit bricks nervous. I have a picture of him with me and him, which I didn't send you, where like we're standing together and he's got his arm around me and smiling. And I'm literally like this.
Oh, like, what, send like, it to me. We're going to put it in. We'll have.
So, but I worked with him a couple of times and I got not close with him, but like, he got familiar with me, especially because I was Harold Reynolds' boss for a little while and him and Harold are like tight. So
Right.
Yeah, so I was down in Florida doing a shoot with him, and later that night I was going to fly back because it was my buddy's birthday party. And so we do the shoot, and we're joking around, and he goes, are you hanging out for the game? I said, no, I don't think so. He goes, I got my friend's birthday party I got to go to. He goes, you sure? He goes, because a couple of us are going out afterwards. I was like, yeah. I'm like, I got to catch a flight and blah, blah, blah. It didn't register. You know what I mean? Like, I was And then he walked.
Who wants to go out on a night on the town with that bum?
But Mark, like, I didn't like it. It didn't sound to me like he was like saying, "You want to come out?" Like, you know what I mean? Like, it just like, because first of all, why the fuck would Derek Jeter want to hang out with me?
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, second of all, I don't know. Just the way he said it, like, you know, like, oh, he's sticking around. Like, it was almost like he was going to being nice. And then I was like, nah, I'm going to go home. And he stopped and he looked at me. And goes, all right. And then runs the and the two locals, the cameraman and the audio guy who I just met that day, like, give me one of these. They're like,
Who do you hang out with? Well, the Derek Jeter.
Right. They were like, did you just turn down Derek Jeter? I was like, did I? You know what I mean? Like, all of a sudden it set in. I was like, yeah. Did I just want to run after me? Like, no, Derek, I'm okay. I'm okay.
Well, you know, the night could have ended with you back at Derek's place putting your phone in a plastic baggie.
Okay. You know, yes. Dude, you know what? I've seen stuff like I'm fine with that. You know, like I got a good. I did get a moment with him, and then you know what? I'll tell you guys off. This is actually one of those stories.
Well, it's funny because we're gonna have to close early on the show, Mark, because I got like 5 questions that he can't tell on the air, and I gotta talk to him off air.
Yeah, we're gonna
just hit me because, like, but like, you know. I gotta be respectful. The very first person in baseball I ever sat with was Billy Sample. You guys remember Billy Sample?
Yeah.
So like, I'm working at baseball for 2 weeks, and there's Billy Sample, first baseball player like I ever like saw like that outside of the sport. A gentleman and a scholar, Billy Sample, just one of the truly great guys. And he says to me, he goes, "You want to go out for drinks?" I'm like, "Yes." I go out with Billy Sample, and he tells me the most amazing stories of being a baseball player in the 80s, like Led Zeppelin shark stories. And the thing I always will remember is that he would say what he did, but he would never, ever, ever give the name of the other people in the story. You know what I mean? And like, even though like I'm not press, like I'm not going anywhere, I always really respected that about him, that there was this kind of like, you know, I saw things, and I'm happy to tell you that I was the one with the syphilis, you know what I mean? But I'm not going to tell you the other three guys who walked into spring training with a cold sore that day. You know what I mean? So, you know, so that's why I'd be happy to tell you some of these other stories.
I remember back in the 80s, some basketball player was in Houston, and he got caught with like 3 hookers in a hotel room.
Yeah.
And they were interviewing one of the Knicks about it, and literally he's going – in Houston? And it, like, he wasn't, they're going, isn't this terrible? What do you think of this? That he had prostitutes? He's going, in Houston? Like, his point was, why would you ever bother in Houston? You can get
you can get it for free in Houston.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a term for that they use. I'll tell you that off the air too.
Because I kind of have an idea where I want to go with this interview. I'd like to talk about your show, EWC, and just you're a writer, you know, you're direct.
Now it's the cycle.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, let's talk about both of them because they're both pretty exciting.
Well, Express Written Consent was actually a celebrity talk show we used to do that we would do at the suite at Dodger Stadium, which was amazing. Like that's the best thing I ever did with baseball, hands down, because somehow I got baseball to agree to give me a suite at Dodger Stadium where I could host celebrities and make a show. You know what I mean?
Dude, you're amazing.
And it's not me, man. It's just sometimes you just gotta, like, it just, you see that tiny little hole and you're like, I'm gonna jump through that hole. You're amazing. But that was great. And one of my proudest career moments is that we were actually a question on Jeopardy.
Wow. Like,
yeah, I was in Kentucky, and I was out to dinner with Laura, my wife, and my friend texted me. He goes, "You were just a Jeopardy question." I was like, "What?" And he sent it to me, and it was a legit Jeopardy question that referenced my show, Express Written Consent. And I was like, I didn't know that that's what I wanted to achieve in life, but I've now achieved that in life. You
know? But you were the host, or you
no,
were
no, 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 no,
producer.
Nobody wants to see me on camera. No, but that was a lot of fun. And then from there, it morphed to The Cycle Now, which we do with Rachel DeMita, who's this great social media star, and Budweiser, which honestly, if I had a Budweiser, I'd be drinking it to their, you know, for their sponsorship, and sponsored it. And it's going to be great. It's coming out in June. You know, we got Mayim Bialik, Michael Pena. We're doing baseball players like Adam Jones. And
it's on MLB Network?
It's going to be on the network. It's going to be on MLB Social. It's going to be on YouTube. So, you know, it's going to be awesome stuff.
Cool.
Okay,
man.
So something else I was super in. Ooh, go ahead. Sorry, Richie.
I think we're going to have to watch it.
Yeah. Oh, definitely.
Starts in June.
Okay.
Another cool project you're working on is with the NHL.
Yeah.
So it's a virtual reality.
Yeah. So this year is the 40th anniversary of the goal with Bobby Nystrom and John Tinelli. That overtime goal that won the Islanders their championship.
Right.
You're talking to a Long Island guy right over there.
You'll love this, then, is that we did this 360 virtual reality thing, which is great because it's even on broadcast TV, it brings you these angles that you can't see. So instead of this 2D thing, you can sort of look around and be like, oh, that's where the person was positioned over there. Oh, that's where the person was positioned over there. We got Bobby Nystrom and John Tinelli, who is Bobby Nystrom had not been on skates in 20 years to recreate their goal at the American Dream Mall on the rink at the American Dream. And I love hockey, but I'm not an Islanders fan. It was one of the best days of work I've ever had because you realize that you're in the presence of not just in the presence of legends. Like I've been in the presence of legends before,
right,
the Hall of Fame and everything like that, but to see these guys like lace up and recreate the thing that made them famous,
right,
for me,
right,
was amazing. And that's going to be on the NHL Network this Sunday at 7.
This Sunday at 7. Make sure we have some major hockey fans that watch.
Yeah, I love hockey.
I'm old enough. I remember that 4-year run with the Islanders. So
it was amazing. Yeah. It was amazing. You talk about like things in sports that you don't know if can ever happen again. That 4-year run by the Islanders was absurd.
And the funny thing is, you went from that to Edmonton too. So it was like one bat, and then because the Oilers just were. That was like right after that was Gretzky and all of that. And it was, quite a run in hockey.
So we do have a time crunch. We barely hit any of the notes that I have here.
Sorry, Matt.
No, there's one story we have to close on because there was another person who is involved in this story who told their version of the story.
Okay.
You shadowed Bill Murray.
Yes.
And Eddie Vedder.
Yes.
During a World Series game.
Yes.
There was Cubs and Indians. Yeah. And there was another person just a row behind them who was friends with Pearl Jam who told this story. We want to hear your side of it.
Okay.
We want to hear your being in your shoes.
I don't know if my story is going to be the same as his. Because of my relationships with celebrity during jewel events is what they're called, like the World Series, the All-Star Game, opening day, like these are jewel events. Like during jewel events is I generally celebrity duty to saddle up alongside them, make sure they behave and try to get them to do content for us. And so it was the Cubs and Indians. I mean, 7 games versus those
great
two teams.
Series.
Oh, great series. Great.
Whoever wins breaks a hex. I mean, it was just ridiculous.
That Rajai Davis home run in the ninth inning. Dude, I was standing outside the Cubs clubhouse because we thought, that's what you do is you wait.
Right.
And we can't see the TV. And then all of a sudden, when I tell you I thought it was an 8.0 earthquake, you know what I mean? Like, I was like, what happened? And the security guard comes running. He's like, Davis Homer, tie game. I was like,
wow.
Is this nutso? But that series brought out the stars, almost even more so than like a Dodgers series. You're talking
about
John Cusack, Vince Vaughn, Bonnie Hunt, Pat, all
yeah,
these.
Yeah, well, you're right. It was crazy.
But Murray is legit. Like, he's not just like, I like baseball because I can be seen at baseball. Like, he is legit. And they were like, Ferno, you're on Murray duty. I was like, all right, cool. He is insane. He is everything that you think Bill Murray would be. And so the Cubs win. And now I'm walking on the field with Bill Murray. And my phone is blowing up. Ferno, you see you on TV with Bill Murray, blah, 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 blah. But Murray's walking around like somebody who had just gotten his first blowjob. That's the only way I can describe, you know what I mean? Like he's just got this like euphoric, like floating through the thing. Look, And then Eddie Vedder comes walking on the field, and they get together. And then at the end of every game, there's a Chevy, okay? And they have to give away the Chevy. And it's a big deal. It's live on TV. And Vedder and Murray jump on the Chevy and start jumping up and down. And so the people are there's Vedder right behind us. And so so the sponsorship people look at me like, Fernando, we got to put a stop to this. And so I don't know what to do. So I just go, hey, Bill, Eddie, you got to stop that. Otherwise, we're going to get in trouble. And then Murray stops and goes, oh, Eddie, we're going to get in trouble. And then just walks away. I was like, oh, yeah.
So if you... if you look in this picture where you see Eddie Vedder, right to the right of him is our good friend of the show, Craig Gass.
Oh, really?
Who's joining them. That's
pretty awesome.
He was with the guys from Pearl Jam, but he didn't know Bill Murray was there until he turned around and hugged him.
Yeah. It was pretty amazing. And listen, I'm so, like, honestly, I'm honored that you guys would think of me enough to have me on this show. Especially since I'm mostly behind the scenes and nobody gives a shit. So,
dude, we want you to come back on. I'm telling you, we barely hit any of the stuff we wanted to talk about.
I know, and there's a bunch of good stories I got to tell you, but I got to go because we're taping this game show.
Yeah,
and they have stepping in as a host. So
please come back. We'd love to have you back.
Oh, anytime.
Right now with sports starting, we'd love to talk to you more about that. What, you know, we didn't really get into the whole what everybody's been going through without sports and everything.
Oh, yeah, anytime. And hopefully I can offer some insight as to some of the technological things we're trying to do to bring sports back. I'll just leave you with this, is that I can tell you from the bottom of my heart, I've really never seen anything like it, is that baseball has come together as a group, as an organization, to really just – they're doing everything they can to try to figure out how to get the game going. You know what I mean? Like, they know how important it is to people. More than ever, and there's people smarter than me, a lot smarter than me, who are just working day and night to try to figure out a way to bring it back.
That's cool. Awesome, man. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Scott, for having me.
Thank you. Definitely have you back.
You, don't leave the broadcast. Don't hit leave studio. Stick around. But folks,
we'll talk.
That is Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.
Last call.
Thanks for listening to Drinks, Jokes, and Storytelling.